Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to chumbacasino.com.
Chumbacasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randall. Dive into the live courtroom drama as we bring you unfiltered audio from one of the most riveting trials of the year. Accused of multiple marital murders, Randall's fate unfolds before us. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. This is Dark Vows.
Thomas Randolph, I would argue, and I am positive, was excluded from that mask. Excluded. And Michael Miller was included 1 in 4. Not a high number, but only 1 in 4 of the population. In other words, 1 out of every 4 people in the population could have made the DNA they found. But Michael Miller was included in that. Thomas Randolph was excluded. What a coincidence, isn't it? That there's a mask with 1 in 4 DNA that it's Michael Miller, laying right next to Michael Miller. Vita Miller tells you, a mask like that went missing December. Billy Miller, Graves, and Detective O'Kelly told us the mask wasn't recovered. What a coincidence. No, it isn't, because I asked Detective O'Kelly. You know why you didn't find it? Because the mask right there. He didn't seem to dispute it. Remember yesterday? Detective O'Kelly was sort of like, yeah, that's the mask. That's the mask. He stole the mask, too, because he's a thief. Stole the gloves. He stole the mask. He stole the ID. He stole the ring. He stole the cell phone. It couldn't be any more coincidental. Because what is he? He's a burglar. They never located the mask. And there are the gloves. Clear as day. Why is he wearing gloves? Because his fingerprints can't be on that. Those jewelry boxes. Or is he just dressing up to play the part and then going to run out of there? Who would have ever seen it? There's no video in there. Why is he dressed the part of a burglar? Why? Why is he dressed the part of a burglar? Because that's exactly what he is. Where was the getaway? Don't you ever wonder that? How is he going to get away? He's got these bags of jewelry, gloves. How is he going to get away? I'd suggest to you that we probably don't know the answer. Maybe he was going to steal that Pontiac in there. Maybe he had somebody waiting. How did he get there? They looked for a bike. They couldn't find one. And then we also notice, don't we, the medical equipment on there. Why is that important? Mr. Tomchak showed you that in the beginning. It's very important because they're trying to tell you that crime scene is preserved. All it takes, as I've been walking around this floor, if there's marble on there, I'm probably going to kick it. You bring 5 of me, we're definitely going to kick it. And they've got paramedics in there, which they should have gone in there. But to then start saying, this is where the cartridge was, that scene was absolutely a nightmare in terms of preservation. You had to have noticed that. It's an absolute nightmare. What they did was fail to preserve this scene. Gloves, mask. And look at the mask. You'll have it back there with you. Look at that really weird thing in the mouth. Okay? It's like, looks, I don't know. Like fishing line, but I don't know. But it reminds me of what Billy Miller told us, told the police, that the mask he had a big mouthpiece. And I can't do it because I can't tamper with evidence. I can't tamper it, but I always wondered if it was undone, would it have a huge mouthpiece? Because it tells you where it's coming from. Tommy Randolph was excluded off the DNA. We know what happened. Cash, jewelry, guns, prescriptions. He knew where they were located, Mr. Miller. He knew. That's what he was going for. And he was going for them that night. Did he need, maybe he needed a fix? If it was love, maybe he just needed himself something, some drugs. Ransacked. You see how they fought us on ransacked? It's not ransacked. The house is not ransacked. They kept telling you that over and over and over. It wasn't ransacked. Yes, it is. And there's going to be something very, very important we're trying to tell you about that scene. Remember we're talking about how Sharon's blood was into the carpet. What we're saying is that once she was shot, it would be almost impossible to get over her to get in then to ransack. The only reason we're saying that is because it shows that what happened in the master bedroom happened before she was shot. And so we know it has to be Michael Miller. It has to be. And how is that not a ransack? He just got caught in the middle of it. He knows what to look for. He's got jewelry, but look at this. Look at these drawers. Look at the jewelry. Those were shells that are pulled out. And I don't want to concentrate. You've seen that, but you see how I get off that. But you can see how there's no blood prints. Remember, I talked about that at length because it's not like somebody stepped in it and then started to go back in to start to burglarize, steal. It happened beforehand. It tells you what was happening. He got caught in the act. Michael Miller got caught in the act. And when Sharon came home, he shot her. He threw the gun down. It's obvious. It's plain as day. There's no footprints. Jewelry was taken before Sharon was shot. Here's the truth. See, this is not the words of Tommy Randolph. These are somebody else's. Michael Miller was coming into money. How's he going to get it? He's going to steal it from the Randolphs. Then he's going to move to Florida or California with his girlfriend, who we know nothing about. And he's never going to have anything to do with Randolph again. Don't take my word for it. Don't.
Now, if I understand you correctly, you said that Mike said that he was coming into some money and he was going to go with his new girlfriend and they were going to move to Florida or California. Remember that?
Yes. Yes, Sergeant.
And Mike also told you that he was going to have nothing more to do with Mr. Randolph. Right?
Right.
Just so I understand that, Mike's saying, I'm not going to have anything more to do with this man over here, right?
Right.
And I'm going to come in with some money. I'm going to move with my girlfriend to Florida or California. Right?
Right.
That concludes cross-examination.
There's your motive. It's right there. That was his own end. State's witness, then. I just asked the question. He's getting rid of Thomas Randolph. He's getting rid of Thomas Randolph, and he's leaving, and he's coming into money. It was so obvious what the motive is. He stole the mask, he stole the gloves, he's getting out of town, he's going to rip them off, he's got a few hours window. It's obvious. It's obvious. I want to keep reminding you of something. If there's any one of you, if you're back there in deliberations and say, you know, when that lawyer Chris Orme got up, I can disprove or I think he's wrong about that. Okay. I don't have a burden of proof. I don't know how many times I could say that. In our country, the state of Nevada has a burden of proof. States all over the place, all over our states, all over the United States, and the federal government have the burden of proof when they bring a person to trial, to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, where the defendant has to do nothing. We haven't shown reasonable doubt here. No? I suggest it's overwhelming the doubt.
Now, if I understand you,
they told you an opening argument, the prosecutor. The scene doesn't add up. Well, no, it doesn't. Not for their case. It most certainly doesn't. That scene doesn't add up. Who came in and cleaned it up? They had a week difference where they come back and find cartridges. Randy McPhail, That was the crime scene analyst. Maybe it'll refresh your memory, because Mr. Tomczyk said, you know, you've got a reputation when you were working there as perhaps the finest that could be. And what did he say? He even admitted, like, that crime scene screwed up. He has all this stuff, about 5'8", blood and brain matter. And Mr. Tomczyk, he said something funny. I thought that was really amusing, this part. Mr. Tomczyk started talking about he's 5'8", his eyes, or something along those lines. And Mr. McPhail said, oh, no, he's 6'3". And when they were saying it was not higher than 5'8", I kept thinking I am more relevant than they are. Because if I was cleaning, that's where to be. About 5'8", cleaning. They didn't go up higher. Whoever did the hazmat, they just see this, and they cleaned it. They cleaned the walls. They cleaned the walls. You see, they cut away the material. And then they come back in, and they're, oh, look, we found two cartridges. Therefore what? Therefore you screwed up the crime scene? They didn't even have to. What about that safe? Do you remember when I showed you the safe yesterday? And before I forget, you know what I was pointing out about Detective O'Kelly pointing up at all those arrows? Colleen was holding her child. What are those arrows? What do they depict? Blood and brain matter. Show me. Think about that picture. It's in evidence. We put it in evidence for a reason. What are you showing? Look. What are you showing? This was a screwed up crime scene. They didn't even take a picture of the big safe. They tell you it's not ransacked. How do they get away with that? How is it not that? How is all of this starting not to add up to terrible, terrible doubt? In fact, I don't have any burden of proof, and I don't want to say it. I think we proved he was actually innocent. If you want to find him guilty of being a cheat, a cheater, adulterer, oh, guilty. He couldn't shut up about it. He tells the police, but he doesn't hide it from anybody. Don't tell your wife that. It's rude. He does. He tells the police that. They don't have to find out. Oh, yeah, look, I'm not going to cheat. Listen. It's not nice. And if that's why he's guilty, if you're a cheater and you're guilty, or you're obnoxious and you're guilty, that's so unfair. He may be those things, and you may not like it. But I suggest to you that that's an innocent. We don't have to prove it. If you disagree with me, we don't lose. You have to say that what I'm saying right now is false, beyond a reasonable doubt. It was obvious. You read that reasonable doubt instruction. Remember that burden of proof. It wasn't evidence the first day. Look at that rug, see? Miss Weckerly, fairly, I really do congratulate her when she said that. I thought it was very fair on Miss Weckerly's part when, right now in her closing, she said that Thomas Randolph said the door was closed, but she did say, you may remember, she said, in fairness, he does say that thing in the walk-through. For that, and to Miss Weckerly, I congratulate her. I think that's very fair. That rug shows you something. That door had been propped open, and you can see that place had been cleaned. They contaminated the crime scene. They let so many officers into that crime scene. Look at the people at the scene. Officers at the scene. Before I go any farther, Miss Weckerly said, well, you heard from the first responders. I thought we heard from one. I thought we heard from one first responder. We didn't hear from all these people. Do you see that one? If you could just pay attention. He entered the garage. Look at all those people. Look at them. Seeing clean. Hazmat crew came in. Cleans all the blood. Cleans up to head level. Mr. McPhail, highly respected man, said so. Detective O'Kelly, he said so. Crime scene's so damaged. And actually, I'd suggest the crime scene matched what Mr. Randolph said. You know, War Hero walked in here yesterday. Don't know if that, after cross-examination, yeah, you be the judge. War Hero. Yeah, did you have Bronze Star with a B? That means for heroism. And what I would ask you, did you believe him when he counted the story of why he got that medal? Did you believe him? Because he said, let's recount it, that what I presume was Taliban was coming at him. He said he shot a shotgun. Remember how trained he was? And he said it was the strangest thing because he didn't hear it. He didn't hear the shotgun. He said, that's strange. I didn't hear the sound of the gun. He said he killed the guy. And then he realized, oh God, I can hear sound. I can hear gunshots. He looked down between his legs. He saw a bullet. And then the other one went by his right ear and he turned. He said, get out of, remember he said, I get out of tunnel vision, like his training. And he looked and there was a man coming through a hole with an AK-47 shooting at him. And he shot and killed him. And what I thought was interesting is he repeated that story. He repeated that story. And then he came on the witness stand and repeated the story again. And then he sort of turned to Judge Jones and said, I could actually still draw the hole. Do we call him a liar or a war hero? I mean, I wonder if you give somebody like us the pictures of that wall and say, you're telling me there was Taliban coming through that hole? There's a hole in that wall? What, like a nail? What are you talking about? Did you not believe him? He was telling you the truth. I would suggest that man was telling you the truth. There was no hole in the wall. There was no hole in the wall. None. But he believed it. Because he told us that there are distortions. He said there's distortions. Audio, visual, time. And I talked with Detective Bogg about officer-involved shootings. This has nothing to do with officer-involved shootings. Hopefully you understood what I was doing. These are trained officers, and look at the psychological impact and effects that it has on them. It could show signs of depression, tension, agitation, irritability, and fatigue. You feel detached and numb. You may feel emotional reactions that include confusion, impaired decision-making, loss of judgment, slowness of thought. More common reactions are fear, anxiety, anger, rage, blaming those responsible for the outcome of the case. This is what trained police officers feel. And so, when the state of Nevada wants to pick on Thomas Randolph for where he's standing and how many times he's shot, be aware, that's not how they hold their own law enforcement. We don't hold our own law enforcement to those standards. And can I borrow that word?
Sure.
Great, thank you. I want to... This is 36 inches. So, remember what I did with Detective O'Kelly. I asked him, I said, well, tell me from where Thomas Randolph comes out of the room. And by the way, before I continue on with this, I want you to concentrate. You watch that walkthrough. Thomas keeps saying, as he came out the door, he describes it, the guy goes this way. And Detective O'Kelly, for the life of him, can't accept it. He keeps moving the other way. Now you're down here. Just listen to what the witness is saying. Let him recount it. Because what he's doing is he's dragging, come down here, and then I can really prove you wrong. You watch that video and see how Detective O'Kelly does. Well, yesterday with Detective O'Kelly, I said, from that doorway to the place where Mr. Miller's heels are, how far is it? 5 or 6 feet. Well, that's double that. Okay? That's double that. Do you know in Mr. Randolph's interview with Mr. Mogg and Mr. Hardy, they asked Thomas Randolph, how far was he from you when you shot? He says, here to you. And Detective Mogg said, so about 3 feet. So if we know it's 5 to 6 feet to where his heels are, Michael Miller's, and that's where Thomas Randolph is, that's 3 feet. So he's saying that the guy is about 3 feet from him. Now, Michael Miller is 2 feet. He's that far from the garage door where he fell. Look how close he is. That first shot is in the left side. I don't know what the state's saying. Left side, oh, this is a big deal. Left side, right side, shot in the top of the head from somebody on the second floor. No, shot right there. People move. Some people love collegiate wrestling. People are moving. When you watch wrestlers go, you watch UFC, They're moving all along. And when people are moving in terrible combat positions, they're doing things, they're moving their bodies. Shots can go in an elbow, shots can go here, shots can go there, and that's what you see. That shot went through the left side and stayed inside him. That's the one. Remember, the detective had seemed to not know that because I had to show him the autopsy. That bullet went in. I would suggest that's the first one. Don't know. You can't recreate it, but it makes a lot of sense. The one right on. It's Thomas Randolph's in this firefight. Boom! Right, he gets him. Whatever position they're in, whatever, you can't tell. But it gets him, stays inside. That's why it doesn't through and through, and it doesn't make any kind of mark. The door is already open. He starts to run. And just like there's not a hole in the wall, he's just talking about 3 feet. And when he's saying the angles on a head, maybe he's still leaning up. He's not dead. He's leaning up. Maybe he's falling onto the fridge. Maybe he's holding it. We don't know. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but that's what happens. There's no video. So we don't know. But we're talking about 5 or 6 feet. Why, if Thomas Randolph wanted to make it up, didn't he just say it happened in the garage? Why, if he shot him in the garage, he ambushed him in the garage in this big conspiracy, why didn't he just say it? Why would he make that up? Why would he make up this fire extinguisher? I do not know what the relevance of this fire extinguisher is. I do not know why we've had to spend so much time fighting against a stupid fire extinguisher. I asked Detective O'Kelly, you know, somebody murders your wife like that. You could shoot him as many, I'd shoot him as many times as I want. I could do more than that, and I would. Who cares? You have a right to defend your wife. You have a right to self-defense. So what difference does a fire extinguisher make? Other than that's actually what happened. He's saying it was a nail on the wall. That's not what it was. It was on the refrigerator. Who cares? It's a red herring. It makes no difference. But boy, are they talking. You know there's no dust mark on the refrigerator. Well, then take a picture of it. Don't tell us that. It doesn't make sense. And you look at the bolts on that fire extinguisher. There's two of them. Everybody can see that. But what's the point? What do they think he did? Do you think they pulled it off the wall, bashed it on his head? Well, he could have done it if he wanted to. But that's not what happened. He just said he got scared. They seem to have abandoned the light, haven't they? They really made a big deal about the light when it turned off. But I was able to show, when I cross-examined Detective O'Kelly, we even saw a video today. He pushed the button when he went out. Why would he go get a neighbor? Why would you go get help? Because you're scared. You don't know what's going on. You're apprehensive. There's a hole in the wall. Okay? So, and he said Michael Miller was going to push it. He just turned on the light, and when it turned off, all he's saying is it scared him. What difference does it make? Why is he making it up? It makes no sense. If it happened in the garage, he ambushed him in the garage, why doesn't he just say it? Why does he have to cover it up? Does it make a difference in a self-defense? Does it make a difference? It makes no difference whatsoever. So why does he have to make a big deal? Why is he making it up? Why? Do you see the question? Why? If you shot him, if Thomas Randolph shot him in the garage, just say, I shot him in the garage. I chased him down. I shot him. Boom, 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 boom. Why not? It's not a problem. Shoot a person in the garage. Just murdered your wife. They're not even going to argue that's not a thing. The state will not stand up and say that his actions, if he is innocent, like if he had no involvement, that there's something wrong with that. They won't. They're saying it's a conspiracy, that he had planned this. But I ask you, why does he lie about that? Fire extinguisher. Why does he come up with this ridiculous thing about the garage? Just say. Makes no sense. That's the height of, that tells you, you think of smaller people wiping down the hallways, they just didn't get up on a ladder and clean. It happened, the walkthrough, after they decided Tommy is involved. Do you remember how quickly they rushed to judgment? They rushed very quickly. Detective O'Kelly said, I was suspicious. Even in the briefing, I was suspicious. And then when I heard Detective Bogg talking about it, I was suspicious. They focused in on him. And that's why they didn't interview the girlfriend. Because they focused in. There's your guy. And he didn't do the job. They failed. Entire cleanup of that house. People walking in and out for a week. He identified that wrong gun. Don't you see he identified it? Thomas Randolph did. Thomas Randolph took a .22. It doesn't make sense. He thought it was the murder weapon. He thought it was the murder weapon. It was a .38 caliber. And it's pretty unfortunate because I know it was just a mistake, but the prosecutor put up the .22 and says, there's the murder weapon. It's not the murder weapon. Which is a big point of ours. Why would he do it? He did it because he didn't know. He didn't know. He thought it really was the gun that was used. Guns. As you look at that scene, this makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. I need to talk to you about some of the other witnesses that played a role in this case. I want to talk to you for a second about Toni Bean. She said something very valuable, because you're wondering, you know, they made a big deal out of Thomas Randall said, I tried to call 911 and it wouldn't work. By the way, look at the pictures of the 911 on the face. It's 9114. I think if you listen carefully on the 911 call, you hear a push of a button. I think it's Randolph pushing the 4. The only reason I'm saying it to you is it shows he's nervous. He's something wrong. 9114. He called through to 911, but at some point he pushes a 4. Toni Bean said on the second day of trial, it was a company called Vonage. This is her describing how she talked to Sharon. It was a company called Vonage. Remember that? Yes. Sometimes when you talk to Sharon on the phone, the call would drop. Yes. And what happened? And that happened several times, correct? Yes. That was a thing you knew about talking to her and that phone, that the Vonage service in that house would go out, right? Yes. He's just saying the same thing Toni Bean said. Toni Bean also said something very important. She said that she talked to you about where you were going that night, being Sharon. You knew Tommy had been to the bank, yes. You knew he'd withdrawn a large amount of money from the bank, yes. And that he was going to... This is going to be Sharon's state of mind. This is what Toni Bean said Sharon's state of mind was. She talked to you about what they were going to do that night. Yes. You knew Tommy had been to the bank. Yes. And that he had withdrawn a large amount of money from the bank. Yes. And that he was going to put it in another bank. You told Dino Kelly in 2008 he was going to put a large amount of money in the bank. Yes. Because that's what Sharon told you. Yes. I'm using that for Sharon's state of mind. He had money in the bank. And that, before I forget, they're going to try to talk about finances. There's some motive. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I can still remember something very distinctly at the very first day. Some of you probably weren't here on the first day of jury selection. Who here has insurance on life insurance? And I remember it was a sea of hands going up. Everybody seemed to. And the reason I say that is because if that person dies, whoever the beneficiary is, has motive. If you're married and your wife dies, you have motive. That's why oftentimes in a homicide of a husband or wife, the first person they look at is the other person because they immediately have motive. If I die, my suit will go to my wife. She has motive. She's going to get my suit. Maybe some other things too. Okay. Lots of people have motive. Lots of people have financial motive. Almost every, if you think about it, if you really do the analysis I'm saying, almost every single one of you, if you think about somebody closely associated with you, you got a nice, you got a nice necklace, and somebody kills you, I got a motive, that's what I did. And a lot of people in our society use your ordinary common sense. They have weird motives, they kill for almost nothing in our society. People have motive. It doesn't mean anything. He had a natural motive. Those life insurances were coming from 2006. You're saying that he's a mastermind for 2.5 years or a year and a half or whatever time that is? Oh, I'm going to mastermind this. And I love the way this was presented constantly. Thomas Randolph got life insurance. No. No. Sharon got life insurance. She's the one that has to go and get, she has to urinate in a cup, she has to sign it. You look at those documents. That's her getting it. That's her protecting somebody that she loved. And just because a will gives, hey, I want to give something to my daughter, doesn't mean she didn't want, if something happened to her, Thomas Randolph to have something too. That was her who did that. And that is not, it's, why isn't it a million? You're planning this for 2.5 years? And then you're going to find Michael Miller? A year and a half later? No good deed goes unpunished, I tell you. I heard what a weird relationship this is. Why? Why? You can't give anybody a chance? If you have somebody who maybe makes less money, maybe you're a rich person, you have a landscaper, you can't be kind to them. You've got a pool lady. You can't be kind to them. You can't befriend them. You can't have a, all of a sudden, you know, I like the Raiders. You like the Raiders. I like the Montreal Canadiens. You like those, them too. So you become friends. What is the real reason? Is it age? Is there something that really bothers you about this relationship? What's so weird? They say it's weird because he met him at a gas station. It's not like he met him at a gas station and then hid. This man came to Easter dinner. This man fixed the pigeon problem at Colleen's house. And the inconsistencies of some of the state's witnesses in the beginning were dooming him. And what I mean by that, the prosecutor told you in the beginning there was a roof project and nothing got done. Well, Michael Beyer, he confirmed that, didn't he? Nothing got done in the roof. And then it was Victoria who came in and said, you know what? He claims he has a bad back, Tom Randolph, and he was up on the roof and Miller was right by there. I'm like, okay, so he's doomed because Michael Miller and him aren't doing anything on the roof. And then another witness comes in and says, oh no, they're on the roof and he has a bad back, so that proves he doesn't have a bad back. Well, then he's damned if he does. And he's damned if he doesn't. There were other things like that. Billy Miller said, ah, he didn't pay him, he didn't give him anything. Yet I hear today, oh no, he's paying him. Why was he paying him all this? Michael Beyer said he gave him $300 to clean the garage. I would have cleaned the garage for $300. So is he paying him? And that makes him doomed? Or is he not paying him? And that makes him doomed. It was inconsistent. All in a way to harm him and make it impossible for him. You know, I heard so much about how that man was not loved by Sharon. Well, actions speak louder than words. Actually, that's what my wife says all the time. Actions speak louder than words. Where did they go the week before? They went to Arizona. Excuse me. They went to Utah together. They went to Utah together. Why? Maybe we could just use our ordinary common sense. Because they love each other. And they were going to Utah to help his hurt father. His father had a stroke. And what did Thomas tell the police about that? She was wonderful. Actually, I moved my father into a better place because of her suggestion. And then, who was spending Mother's Day with her? And apparently, that was upsetting some people. Because she chose, having been with Thomas Randolph for a week, to spend Mother's Day with him and walk out holding her his hand. Why? Because she doesn't love him? And then they were going to go the next week. And the next day, where were they going? Back to Utah. See his parents. Actions speak louder than words. We can say all day long she doesn't love him. Even the tattoo that was mentioned in the place where some people would have their bikini. Okay? But to sit there and argue that, well, she got a tattoo and that was, you know, how do you know that? Maybe she really loved him. And maybe they were very close. And you can say he's all of these things, but she married him and she loved him. There's no divorce proceedings. He has a place in Clearfield, Utah. And people, they're going to try to put up finances as though it was a forensic accounting looking at everything. They just put in some finances. It doesn't prove anything. It absolutely proves nothing. Those are the guns, just for your edification. That is the .22. You can see it wasn't fired. Why did he? That'll always be a mystery. see the one fired? That's the bullet that killed Sharon. Any targets of law? Not much. Justifiable homicide is not unlawful. Justifiable homicide includes the killing of a human being in necessary self-defense or in defense of an occupied habitation or a person against one who is manifestly intends or endeavors to commit a crime of violence. Michael Miller committed a crime of violence. The state agrees. I agree. We all agree with that. Or against any person or persons who manifestly intend and endeavor in a violent, riotous, or surreptitious manner to enter the occupied habitation of another for the purpose of assaulting or offering personal violence to any person dwelling or being therein. A person is not required to retreat before using deadly force if the person is not the original aggressor. Thomas Randolph was not the aggressor. Has a right to be present at the location where deadly force is used. That's Thomas Randolph's house. He had a right to be in there. And is not actively engaged in conduct in furtherance of a criminal activity at the time deadly force is used. Thomas Randolph, that instruction tells you the law. They have to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that that's not what happened. If evidence of self-defense is present, the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt the defendant did not act in self-defense. If you find the defendant has failed, the state has failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the defendant did not act in self-defense, you must find the defendant not guilty. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I am almost done. If you could indulge me, I just want to make sure I don't miss anything, because I won't really forgive myself if I do, so I'm just going to look at my notes really quick, okay? Presumed innocent until the contrary, unless the contrary is proved. That's your reasonable doubt instruction. That tells you the burden of proof. They have to prove what I'm saying to you is wrong beyond a reasonable doubt. I ask on behalf of my much more talented and charming co-counsel, Watkins, if we didn't show you doubt, if we didn't show you doubt, what does reasonable doubt look like if it wasn't shown here? What does it look like in a courtroom? If you will all follow your oath, it's a duty to your country that you're all doing to your society. Judge Jones says, follow the law, look at the evidence in here. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Thomas Randolph is not guilty. They didn't prove it. They didn't prove it. It's a part of perspective. Our perspective is he didn't do it. Look at the law. I urge you to come back in here. I urge you to look at the things the state of Nevada did. They're going to stand up in rebuttal. I won't be able to speak. Look at what they've done. They made a mistake. They were wrong. They were wrong, wrong so many times. Come in this courtroom, whether you like Thomas Randolph or not, and deliver justice. The verdict should be not guilty to all counts. Thank you so much for listening.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll take one last break, and the state has an opportunity to give you a rebuttal argument, and then we will begin the deliberation process. During this recess, you must not discuss or communicate with anyone, including fellow jurors, in any way regarding this case or its merits, either by voice, phone, email, text, internet, or other means of communication or social media. You must not read, watch, or listen to any news or media accounts or commentary about the case. You must not do any research, such as consulting dictionaries, using the internet, or using reference materials. You must not make any investigation, test, or theory of the case, recreating the aspect of the case, or in any other way investigate a criminal case on your own, you must not formally express any opinion regarding this case or respond to the chief. Ladies and gentlemen, it is 2:45. We'll be in recess until 3 o'clock.
All rise for the jury.
You're listening to Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph. There's more raw courtroom drama ahead as we bring you unfiltered audio from trial. Join us as we navigate the testimonies, the tension, and the truth behind the headlines. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a minute. More Dark Vows, the trial of Thomas Randolph, next.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa Welcome Bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.